At the end of March this year, floodwaters overtopped the levee wall in Lismore and poured into the CBD.
Once it comes over the bank of the river,
68% of businesses suffered damage with a combined estimated cost of just under $40 million. This was the most recent flood in a town that has always been in a floodplain, and it prompted a curious North Coast question from newcomer to the region, Warren Hurst.
My question was, when people first settled in Lismore, and the town probably flooded once or twice a year, did they not think to themselves, maybe this isn't such a good place to settle, let's move the town up the hill?
First port of call to answer Warren's question is a local Widgeable knowledge holder.
My name is Gilbert Laurie. I am a Widgeable Yeragal descendant of this country. I was born in Lismore back in 1963, so I grew up in Lismore. It's part of my ancestors' country, so. We used to call Lismore Dundurimba. Dundurimba means swampland in our language, so. And they got another place up on the hill, which we know it as Ganelaba. But the old fellas in my land, we used to call it Goonaba. Goonaba was a place of the waterfall, so. So that's where a lot of the water would run into the swampland, is coming off the hills from Ganelaba and all these other surrounding hills out here. Plenty of hills around here for water catchment, which runs into the Wilson River. River we know it as Marmon, you know, eh? So, yeah, they built Lismore on some swamp, which is a bit bit sad.
Keeps on rising, rising. To find out just who was responsible for establishing a regional centre on a swamp, we went straight to a local expert. Ted Trudgeon is the coordinator and custodian of the Lismore Museum, and he's the go-to man in Lismore on the river and its history.
The first people to come to this area after the Widgeable people were the squatters that came down from the Tablelands. And they were looking for quick access to the sea for their wool. And late in 1842, a group of sawyers from the Clarence went over the Ballina Bar and started a cedar camp. They were looking for red cedar. Of course, the stations have a lot of people. They're like little villages in their own right. And the pub in Lismore was 1854. And there were also houses of other cedar cutters and people here. So it was already developing as a settlement, and because 1,000-ton ships could get up to Lismore, get up to the boat harbour, they could turn around to come back down the right way. So it became a settlement. As soon as it was surveyed, people bought town blocks, so a little town began to develop. There's a lot I didn't realize.
What do people do when it flooded?
It went for high ground.
Just left the houses.
There was a big flood in 1857. That's before the town really began to develop. There was the biggest flood of the time was in 1870. So everybody knew about the floods. You built your house on stilts, right?
Like a Queenslander, yeah.
If you were sensible. They estimate that there were floods back in this early period that were over 12 metres. So these people in this early period would have experienced quite large floods. In muddy, muddy water. But they remained and the town developed and grew.
Flood records begin in 1870, and since then there have been 30 major floods that could have impacted significantly on Lismore CBD. The rain fell around Lismore. With such high risk to property and life, we wanted to find out if anyone had ever proposed to move the CBD away from the river. Lismore City Council's Lindsay Walker and Paula Newman are both on the current Floodplain Management Committee.
Back in the initial settlement times, people would floodproof their properties. They would protect themselves as best they could with the technology they had, which would mean that they would have habitable areas above what they understood to be the flood levels, and that the lower levels were where they just stored things, carried out businesses. They would minimise the impact of the flood. They continued to follow that strategy as best they could until we built a levee, at which time people tried to keep the water out of the city, and they chose a level for the flood which was consistent with keeping most of the water out while not having an adverse aesthetic effect. And they also took an opportunity to undertake a lot of other drainage problems that we had. And it was a good strategy, and it kept quite a bit of water out. It has. It also buys more time. It gives people a better capacity to move things, to understand what's going to happen.
Why the CBD didn't move? I think there's a lot of emotional and financial energy vested in the CBD, and I guess people, the benefits of staying there would have just outweighed the benefits of moving when you look at the number of floods historically that would have impacted.
You've got to understand that a big opportunity in 54, if you look at that and say, why didn't people do it in 54? You have to look at what is happening in the state. In 54, there were floods all up and down the east coast of New South Wales. People died in Maitland. Whole cities got washed away. Houses got washed off their foundations in Casino. People saw Lismore as fine. They're getting on with it. It's going well. It's only lasted a few days. And a week later, they're cleaning up. Compared with some of the other areas, we were a minor event.
Maybe we'll build a bonfire to burn against the night. But if we lift that levee higher, we better build it tight.
The 1954 floods did, however, motivate towns like Lismore to take some major steps in protecting the community. Lismore Council started a voluntary buyback scheme for houses built in high-risk areas, and the first South Lismore levee was constructed in 1975. But it was one of Lismore's cafe owners, Florian Volpato, who came up with the first scheme to try and make Lismore's CBD flood-free. His son Nick Volpato now manages the family businesses, most of which are still in the CBD.
You might say you've been delivered. You might say that you've been dead.
Can you tell me a little bit about your dad's background, Nick?
Florian Volpato, my father, he came from Italy in 1951, post-war, like a lot of Italians did. He bought a motorbike, went up to the north coast, and he would stop into Lismore. Every time he went through Lismore, he thought it was a really, you know, just had a good feeling about it. And he thought, yeah, this is the best place to build something. Yeah, he had a cafe that he wanted to create for Lismore. And even though he was affected by floods, you know, he still was determined to stay within the CBD. He just thought that was the hub of the city.
And do you think he knew that he was starting a business in a flood-prone CBD?
Yeah, I think he was quite aware of it, because when he first arrived in Lismore to settle, they arrived in 1954, just prior to the 1954 flood. So he was very aware of it, I think, but it wasn't daunted by it. He just thought, well, it was just like, yeah, like the mentality is today, just like, yeah, clean up and you just get on with things. But I think that perhaps made him very aware that, you know, this doesn't really need to, if there was a way to avoid this for the future of Lismore, he was going to try to find a way to avoid flooding.
What did your father do about this problem?
He knew engineers in Milan, in Italy, and Guido Colombo was his name, and he paid for him privately to come to Lismore in, I think it was March 1981, and just see if he thought it was possible to try to alleviate Lismore's flooding. You know, he thought by building a diversion canal, it would actually, like, flood-proof Lismore, and that was his goal. So it would increase the value of the CBD, and people would come and invest more.
What can I offer you, my friend?
What did Guido report back?
Yeah, well, his initial interpretation was it could be done. So he thought there was a definite possibility to divert flood water north of Lismore, where the two creeks, where Leicester Creek and Wilson Creek meet, to create a canal and divert flood water west past the airport, and just create like an artificial lake, and with a system that if there was heavy rain in the catchment and water would divert in that area, it would be released further south beyond Lismore. He thought it was definitely quite possible, but he did request to come back again another time to do a complete feasibility study and costing. I guess that was the issue for everybody. You know, how much was this going to cost?
Florian's proposal for a channel was investigated by council, but in their view, there was a major obstacle to the plan.
The floodplain committee modelled the channel to work out how wide did the channel have to be, what was the benefit, could you make it work. The railway was a real problem. And if you tried to just do it as a channel, step back and look at the cross-sectional area of the river at Lismore, work out how wide it is, have a look at how deep it is, work out what the cross-section, and then if you say to yourself, I've got to build a channel that big, that's a huge excavation. That is a really big excavation.
Another strategy to protect Lismore's CBD was the levee wall.
People were first thinking seriously about it in 2000 because, again, you have to look at history. And in 2000, the state government responded to three very, very bad flood events. The first one was Ningen. It got seriously flooded and cut off, and people lost their lives. There was the flood event in Wollongong on the escarpment over Wollongong, where the railway viaduct went down and people died there. And then there was the freak event in Coffs Harbour, which went down the main street. And the state government responded by saying people need to rethink how they do their planning and how they mitigate the impacts of floods. And out of that process, there was a recognition that we could probably do a number of things, one of which is build a levee. Something good's gonna come from this flood. Something good's growing out of this mud.
How can this tragedy be understood? I tell you, people get ready. And so after the recent floods this year, there's a number of possibilities that council is looking at to try to alleviate this problem even more. Can you fill me in on what some of those might be?
It's a little bit early to give you definitive information because the committee has to meet. It goes through a proper process. There is modelling, there is consideration of dollars, impact, people's lives, what happens to them. And it would be rash for us to sit here and say to you, we should be doing this. There were people in the paper saying, why don't we just raise the levee wall? I don't actually think personally that's a great outcome. There are better choices than doing that. There are people saying, why don't we just move? Well, you'd have to say, where to? How can you take the whole CBD? Are we going to sort of clear out the whole Lismore Heights and move it up there or something?
There is an obvious one, isn't there, Lindsay?
Yes. The railway line. Cause of concern for some years has been that railway viaduct area going out of South Lismore.
That railway funneled water towards the CBD. The bulk of our catchment comes from Leicester Creek. So if we can manage Leicester Creek in a better way, take away some of those hydraulic impediments, that water doesn't arrive at the CBD.
Help South, North and the CBD.
It will help everybody. Something good's going to come from this flood. Something good's growing out of this mud.
I know it doesn't look like it should. I tell you, with our Curious North Coast investigation complete, we went back to the man who asked the question, Warren Hurst.
It's very interesting to hear about how the old railway line was channeling water into the town. Yeah, maybe moving that and looking at alternative options to divert the water away from the town. It sounds very promising, but I still wonder, these really big floods coming in like this year, at the end of the day, it is a force of nature, and there's only so much of that we can control.